Welcome to Susitna Writers' Voice, area writers reading their work.
Greetings. Welcome to the Summer Solstice 2017 edition of Stardate Susitna. I'm Kathleen Fleming. Here in the midst of the brightest time of year, I won't be telling you about the night sky events visible only in the more southerly latitudes. Stardate Susitna programs become as scarce as the stars this time of year until a daytime event comes up, the summer solstice, for example. Maybe I'll even have information that's new to you. Stay tuned to find out. Also, I have more solar eclipse news, having recently reconnoitered my viewing location in Oregon. I'll try to keep this to 10 minutes or less, so let's get started. I usually like to start with the moon, which is indeed visible in a daytime sky. La Luna shrinks from third quarter to new moon this week. You can see the waning crescent in the mornings through afternoons. If the sky is a nice clear blue around the moon on Tuesday, look just above La Luna to see the goddess of love, Venus. She's the only celestial object other than the sun and moon visible in the daytime sky. You may need to scan with binoculars first. Look about 4 to 6 moon widths above or slightly to the right or left. When you find her in your binos, try naked eye. It's not hard, really. Check it out. This Tuesday, the moon scoots just below the planet. I'm sure that you are well aware that the summer solstice is this week. The exact time is 8:24 p.m. Alaska Daylight Time. If your calendar mentions the solstice, it probably has it on Wednesday the 21st. Well, that's East Coast time, just after clock midnight. Here in the Upper Susitna Valley, the 20th is just 3 seconds longer than the 21st. Assuming a hypothetically flat horizon, for several days, the sun rises at 4:04 a.m., just 28 degrees east of due north. And for several days, the sun sets at 11:59 or midnight, depending on how you round the seconds, just 28 degrees west of due north. If you are up that early or late, notice where in your house the rising or setting sunlight penetrates. In a more international, global, all-inclusive wording, coming up this week is the June solstice, summer in the north, winter in the southern hemisphere. This is the moment in Earth's orbit when our tilted axis has the north geographic pole tipped the full 23.5 degrees toward the sun. Of course, the south pole is tipped 23.5 degrees away from the sun. 23.5 degrees south of the north pole is the Arctic Circle. That's 90 degrees at the North Pole minus the 23.5 degree tilt of Earth's axis equals 66.5 degrees. And any observer along the Arctic Circle with a flat northern horizon gets to see the sun not set, barely, at local midnight. South of the Arctic Circle, the sun will set on the summer solstice. If you were to look at a globe set in a stand that holds it in the 23.5 degree tilt, the tippy top, relative to the flat table it's standing on, is the latitude of the Arctic Circle. And you can easily imagine that the sun shining on half the globe provides perpetual daylight to all latitudes north of that tippy top 66.5 degree Arctic Circle. As the Earth spins within the Arctic Circle, the sun will not set. Sure, here at 62 degrees north, 4.5 degrees south of the Arctic Circle, the sun does set, dipping only about 4.5 degrees below our northern horizon. But there's no darkness in the sky when the sun remains so near the horizon. At solar midnight, around 2 a.m., the sky merely presents us with civil twilight. Right. Go, 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 with ambient light. Keep hiking, or fishing, or doing chores, forgetting to have dinner, putting off sleep, difficulties falling asleep. It's traumatic, man. All the pent-up life of a long winter is in full flurry now. Plant life, animal life, insect life, and for many folks, economic life. There's a very interesting article in the July edition of Astronomy Magazine about archaeoastronomy, which is the fascinating study of ancient sites that have astronomical significance, Stonehenge in England being the most well-known example. There are many other sites around the world that seem to be solar observatories or calendars. Sunlight enters a chamber on the equinox. An alignment with the rising sun happens on a solstice. Pillars are situated to reveal when a cross-quarter day occurs, etc. This article by Mike Boslow is about the Moon House created by the Puebloan Native Americans in southeast Utah. This 13th century structure built into the cliffs of Cedar Mesa includes rooms and chambers with spaces and holes that may be for sunlight to penetrate on special solar calendar days, and very intriguing wall paintings that might include representations of an eclipsed sun. It's easy these days to predict when and where a solar eclipse will occur and to plot historic eclipses. As we anticipate the first total solar eclipse to touch the U.S. mainland in 38 years and the first in 100 years to sweep all the way across the breadth of the lower 48, it's amazing to think of an astonishing sequence of two eclipses in just 18 months that passed across Cedar Mesa in 1257 and 1259. Seeing the dependable, life-giving sun blotted out in the middle of the day has terrified early cultures around the world. I won't go into all the mythology and responses in this edition of Stardate Susitna, but you can imagine how freaked out people would get before we understood the science of what was happening. The sky goes dark, the temperature drops, and you don't know if the beloved sun will come back to life. So two solar eclipses in as many years would certainly be significant. The Moon House in southeast Utah is indeed a significant, ancient, now preserved and protected astroarchaeological site. Now less than 2 months away, the August 21st total solar eclipse is the first of two in 7 years. Carbondale, Illinois is Eclipse City, as it is near the point on the center line where the duration of this totality is the longest, about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, and Carbondale is near the center line of the 2024 eclipse path that will sweep through Mexico up to Maine. How lucky is that? Well, this one in August is being called the Great American Eclipse, and national awareness is reaching a fevered pitch. I have recently returned from an outing that included visiting family and friends, a graduation and a birthday, and reconnoitering our eclipse viewing site near Madras, Oregon. Holly Papasadora and her family are living there and are prepared for the enormous influx of eclipse enthusiasts and scientists, since Madras is touted as one of a few towns along the entire length of the 4,000-mile-long shadow path with the best probability of clear skies. Holly told me that all the residents are encouraged to stock up on groceries well in advance, and restaurants and grocery stores will fill their coolers with the last deliveries before the traffic jams begin prior to August 21st. With tens of thousands streaming to Madras for the eclipse spectacle, as well as all the festivals and lectures and events surrounding Eclipse Day, running out of fresh food is a real possibility. At the Aviation Museum, where Holly works, with its impressive collection of mostly World War II working vintage airplanes and enormous open-air field, they will be hosting the scientists and presenters from the San Francisco Exploratorium. It's a multi-day extravaganza, which is good, since no one should expect to be able to drive in and out of the eclipse path in one day. I suspect 200 miles of bumper-to-bumper traffic between any metropolitan area and the centerline across the U.S. on Eclipse Day. And Madras has Seattle and Portland to the northwest, San Francisco and L.A. to the south. Might as well consider the traffic jam as part of the social bonding that the eclipse will engender. I gave out at least 50 packets of eclipse maps and viewing glasses on my recent trip, since everyone with clear skies that day will see at least a partial solar eclipse. Most people knew something about the event, some were hearing about it for the first time from me, and some were planning to go to the path of totality. Folks within about 400 miles of the path of totality will see the sky go a weird gray color. But beyond that distance, you wouldn't notice much difference in the quality of light. Gotta know about it and have eclipse shades. That's my mission. In Anchorage, the manager of Middleway Cafe has family in South Carolina, and she plans to join them and drive a short way to witness totality. She was not anticipating the traffic jam I warned her of. They'll just need an earlier start. There are numerous sources of information, including several magazines now for sale, that are entirely devoted to the science and folklore, photography, and viewing tips for the August 21st eclipse. Most of it is focused on totality, but even here in Alaska, the sun will be almost half covered by the moon. Partial solar eclipse is well worth your attention and preparation. Eclipse shades are available to purchase at the KTNA office during office hours. The eclipse is from 8:24 to 10:14 a.m. on a Monday morning. Plenty of time to glance at the moon's progress, right to left, through the lower portion of El Sol. Share the shades with anyone around you. They'll be delighted to see a thick crescent through the safe solar filter on what seems like a normal morning. You won't notice any difference in the sun or quality of sunlight unless you have a safe way of looking at the filtered sun or project its image onto a surface. Gobs of information about safe viewing techniques are available online. I'll do more eclipse-focused Stardate Susitna programs before I leave for Oregon in August. If you still have the option of getting to the path of totality between Oregon and South Carolina, do it. There's nothing like seeing a black hole in the sky with the sun's wispy white corona around it. The brighter stars and planets come out, and you just feel in your ancient gut that this is all wrong. It's freaky weird and a little bit scary. All the books and articles by eclipse enthusiasts talk about these universal reactions, but one sense I've had in all the 5 total solar eclipses I've seen in the last 20 years is a feeling of intimacy with the sun and moon. I've seen this rare and spectacular meeting of the 2 most important celestial deities. I've witnessed their embrace, their power, their effect on the crowds. I have first-hand knowledge of their intimate activity, and that creates a bond between us. Okay, right, that bonded feeling is only one-sided, of course, but still, it strengthens my love and wonder for all things astronomical. So for me, this week, as I appreciate the longest day, the sun at its furthest north rise and set locations, its highest midday altitude, I will think to El Sol, I know what you're going to do in 2 months. And I will be there to see your pairing with La Luna. Enjoy this week of longest days. Until next time, keep looking up.
You've been listening to Susitna Writer's Voice, a production of Talkeetna Community Radio. You can hear these recordings anytime at ktna.org. New contributors are always welcome. You may call the station at 733-1700 for more information.